You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
It doesn't matter. It's just a video. It's not a statement.
Okay,
well, let me ask you this. Do you deny, in parts of your search, just picking up a box and shaking it to see if it shook or not? Do you deny that?
No.
And so, but if you shook an entire box to see if it had a rattle in it, you wouldn't be able to be sure whether or not every single live round, it was all live rounds or a commingled record.
Correct.
In fact, that's the entire basis of the case of what you believe the armorer to have done. Commingled, live, and dummies, right?
Yes.
And yet at the search being conducted to find the source of the lethal round, law enforcement is doing the very same thing that you're complaining about the armorer doing on the set, right?
Yes.
And when you left that search, you are not, as you sit here, sure you got every live round, are you?
No.
And actually, if you look at the boxes inside of that location, you didn't even search half of it.
I don't recall.
So then why on direct examination, do you not recall, did you, the prosecutor ask you, and you tell this jury, that you were confirming that you searched and found every single live round? Why did you testify to that?
I found what I believe to be all the live rounds at the warehouse.
But that's not what you said. What you said was that you found every live round, right?
I don't recall the exact words that I stated.
Well, you certainly said that you searched every single box just 10 minutes ago in front of this jury, right?
I believe that a reasonable search was conducted of the warehouse.
An investigator, I understand you were prepped before you testified today, correct?
I spoke with the prosecution before I testified yesterday.
Okay. And the jury heard something about pre-trial interviews, where you're interviewed and the defense can be there to watch, right?
Yes.
But every time you talk to the prosecutors, the defense is not there, correct?
Correct.
In fact, the vast majority of times you speak to the prosecutors, the defense is not there, correct?
Correct.
In fact, you and I had never met before today, or yesterday, I guess, correct?
Yes.
So you just said, when you originally said that you searched every box, okay, that itself is not accurate, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So now what you're saying is that you did a reasonable search, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing that the search warrant asked you to take was the cameras and the camera equipment, the surveillance footage from PDQ, right?
I don't recall that.
Okay, I'm going to pass up the warrant to refresh your recollection. Do you recall that there was camera equipment there?
There was lots of camera equipment inside of the warehouse.
In fact, you remember Seth Kenny showed you the camera equipment, right?
I don't recall exactly.
Okay, I'm just going to mark this as Defense Z.
Okay. Are you going to mark that? Well, she's going to identify it, and then you're going to...
Yes, I'm just going to see the refreshes.
Okay.
That refresh your recollection about the...
No, it doesn't.
I ask you the warrant and ask you, this is DX23, if this refreshes your recollection of if you were supposed to...
What?
Yes, Your Honor, DX23. Oh.
I'm sorry.
I need to know.
No, we need to refresh.
It's just a refresh. I can make it DX.
So,
and number.
But why are we marking it?
Yeah, why are we marking it?
Then I will mark it.
Yes.
Unmarked.
Yes.
Okay. I'm not seeking to introduce this. I'm just simply asking, does this refresh your recollection that the warrant commanded you to take the video footage? Number 6.
Of surveillance footage, yes.
Okay. And so, did you take the surveillance?
No.
You didn't take the surveillance footage, even though that footage could have shown when people came and left the prop house, correct?
I don't recall if there was surveillance footage.
And the photograph of Mr. Kenny showing the surveillance footage didn't refresh your memory?
No, because I'm standing in the foreground of that photo.
Okay, well, tell the members of the jury what you did to search for surveillance videos that satisfied you that you had complied with the warrant's order. Tell the jury.
I don't recall the footage.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that answer. And because you didn't, right?
I don't recall.
But if you did, it would be on the lapel cameras of Detective Hancock and Sergeant Sook, right?
Yes.
And so if it's not on the lapel cameras of Detective Hancock and Sergeant Sook, you would agree with me it didn't happen, right?
Not precisely. They don't follow me around the entire time, and I don't wear a lapel, so it could have not been captured.
But you're not telling this jury that you looked for it, right?
I'm saying that I don't recall looking for it.
And if you had taken that footage, if any there were, right, you agree with me that it would have shown when people were coming and going from the prop house, potentially, correct?
That's a possibility, yes.
It's a possibility you could have seen when the ammo can got there, right?
Possibly, yes.
You could have seen Sarah Zachary picking up the ammunition, correct?
Possibly, yes.
You could have seen Seth Kenny disposing of ammunition in the 40 days between when the incident happened and when you arrived, correct?
Possibly, yes.
And there's one other thing that it would have shown isn't there?
I don't know.
Well, it would have shown whether or not you all really searched the place, wouldn't it?
Possibly, yes.
And so you didn't take, not voucher, any of the surveillance footage? Correct?
I do not recall looking for the surveillance footage.
Well, again, I know that answer, but you know what you vouchered in this case, right?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
You didn't take into your custody and add to the evidence any surveillance footage, correct?
No.
And you never spoke to any witnesses, you yourself, about what you found at PDQ later, did you?
No.
And you testified on direct examination that you did collect DNA, phones, prints, things like that in this case, right?
Yes.
And you got the armorer, the first assistant director, Dave Halls, Sarah Zachary, and Alec Baldwin's phones, right?
I did not. I don't believe so.
You ultimately vouchered?
I would have to refer to my report. I don't believe I collected all of those things.
Okay. What about DNA extraction?
I did collect DNA swabs from certain individuals, yes.
Okay. Including Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, Dave Halls, Sarah Zachary, Alec Baldwin?
Not Alec Baldwin, but the rest.
Okay. And what about prints, fingerprints?
Yes.
Okay. From Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, Dave Halls, Sarah Zachary?
Yes.
Okay. Did you take the cell phone of Seth Kennedy?
I don't believe so, no.
Did you take the prints of Seth Kennedy?
No.
Did you take the DNA of Seth Kennedy?
No.
Everything that you did take into your custody, in law enforcement's custody in this case, is in your supplemental report. Is that fair?
Yes.
And most importantly of all, it's your testimony you never were able to discover the source of the live ammunition, correct?
I don't believe that's in my supplemental report. I'm not sure how you're phrasing that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure. I'm asking you. When we started, we were talking about solving this question of how a live round got a movie set. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm asking you, this trying to solve that question, did you ever solve it?
I do not have any physical evidence to show where the live rounds originated from.
And you know, I was asking you questions earlier about how come the search happened at night, right?
Yep.
You remember?
I don't recall.
Why Detective Cano stood outside?
I don't recall.
Okay. Isn't the truth that you were just trying to get this over with so that the prosecutors could focus on Alec Baldwin?
No.
You personally believe Alec Baldwin committed no crime. Isn't that the truth?
No.
Don't do that. I'm going to strike that question, okay? I'm going to strike the question. You're going to disregard it, okay, and the answer.
There is zero evidence in this case that Alec Baldwin brought a live round onto set, correct?
Correct.
There is zero evidence in this case that Alec Baldwin loaded that live round into that gun, right?
Correct.
And after this, and you turn to the next chapter of this case, is when the order came from you all, meaning you, the prosecutor, Detective Hancock, to order the testing on the firearm, right?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Sure. As this case moved forward, after what we just discussed, you, Detective Hancock, the prosecutor, made the request to the FBI to order the accidental discharge test, right?
I don't recall when that request was made exactly.
Well, forget exactly when it was made. Do you have any general recollection?
I don't. Okay.
Are you testifying that you don't know whether it was after the PDQ search?
I don't recall.
And at that time, when that test was ordered, you knew that Mr. Baldwin had told you that he had just pulled the hammer of the gun and not the trigger, correct?
I don't recall.
Okay. I'm going to refresh your recollection. I need to find it. And while I'm doing that, you did assist in the taking of the firearm withdrawal. You were involved in the requests coming from the team, right? I'm referring to you, the prosecutors, Detective Hancock, right? You understand when I say team, what I mean?
Yes.
Okay. You were involved in the requests from the team to the FBI about what tests to order throughout this case. Isn't that true?
Yes.
And these were very much group decisions that you made of what you would test, fair?
Yes.
And everywhere in this case that you went, Detective Hancock went, right?
Yes.
So when you were at the church, the day that it happened, Detective Hancock was there, right?
Yes.
And then, you know, when you were at the truck search, she was there, right?
Yes.
In the precinct with Seth Kennedy, she was there, right?
Yes.
At the PDQ search, she was there, right?
Yes.
And every time something happened in this case, you all would meet with the prosecutors to keep them updated, correct?
Occasionally, yes.
Well, when you say occasionally, that's the problem. What do you mean by occasionally?
I mean that I was not always in direct contact with them about every single thing that would occur.
I'm going to approach and show the witness.
Well, she doesn't know.
It is, again, it's body-worn camera, N2121, page 3, line 1.
Same objection, Your Honor.
What is it?
Ms. Popple is not in this transcript.
Well, he's what are you doing? Asking her to refresh her
memory? She was there. I'm asking if it refreshes her recollection.
All right. Overruled.
Does that refresh your recollection about what Mr. Baldwin told you at the scene?
Not particularly.
Okay. Would it be helpful if you saw the video from the lapel camera of you and Mr. Baldwin at the scene and listened to it? Would that be helpful?
No.
That wouldn't be helpful to you, Investigator Baldwin?
I'm not denying that these statements were made, but I do not recall all of the information that was being stated at that time.
I understand that, but you're here to do your best, right?
Yes.
And you want to be fair to Mr. Baldwin, right?
Yes.
So you don't know that if I show you the video of you at the scene, it won't refresh your recollection? Investigator Popple, are you willing to watch the body worn camera, the lapel, from 1021 to refresh your recollection at a break?
Yes.
Okay. And you would agree with me, it may refresh your recollection, sure?
Yes.
And whatever information you had from Mr. Baldwin at the time, well, let me ask you this, withdrawn. Did you tell Mr. Baldwin, don't worry, we're going to find the source of the live ammunition, or words to that effect?
I don't recall, Steve.
You don't deny it, though, do you?
No.
You and the team end up ordering the accidental discharge test, I think you called it the drop test, on the firearm in question, right?
Yes.
And when you all ordered that test, the FBI told you that this test may very well destroy the gun, right?
I don't recall that.
Okay, well, let's... I can't put anything on her screen. I'm going to show you an email in a minute. But you do agree with me that you were involved in the team's decision to send that firearm off to the FBI for that testing, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That firearm that you told me earlier in my examination was something that you were entrusted to keep track of and to protect, right?
Yes.
A piece of evidence that you knew was critical in this case, correct?
Yes.
And the FBI told you, in no uncertain terms, that if they do this test on the firearm, it would alter the condition of the firearm, correct?
I don't recall that.
Okay. We're going to pass up an email to you because I can't show you on the screen. We can show you on the screen, Carol.
Just come up here before they have it.
Are we doing it?
I'm just going to pass up.
Okay, but I need to look.
It's just, you know,
No, there's...
Camper?
Hey, I
wait.
What is the portion of the email that you expect to request to refresh?
You all want to be on the recording for this? Let's just
Point out to me how this.
Well,
is supposed
first
to
of all,
memory.
Just if she can look at the whole document and see if it refreshes her memory. Okay.
That's exactly what I was
Move
gonna
on.
Do. And you see your email address on that email?
Yes, I do.
Well, let her refresh her memory.
Of course, I just wanted to point out your
email.
Does that refresh your recollection?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And it is true, right? You're on this email, correct?
Yes.
And on April 21st, 2022, just after the search of the prop house, you and the team sent the firearm for testing at the FBI, correct?
Yes.
I apologize. I handed the wrong thing. Can we approach?
You can have my copy. I'll take yours then.
Hang on. We need to approach. May we approach?
Yes.
Sorry for the interruption. I'm going to ask the court reporter to read back the exact same question.
On April 21st, 2022, which is after the search of the prop house, you and the team sent the firearm for testing at the FBI, correct? Yes.
And that was... truthful testimony and accurate testimony, correct?
Yeah.
And at the time that you sent it to the FBI for accidental discharge test, which I believe you discussed on your direct examination.
Yes.
So at the time you did that, you knew that the testing would cause this firearm. At the time that this testing was, you knew that the firearm would no longer be in the same physical condition you recovered. Correct? Take a break. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take our lunch break. Please don't talk among yourselves or anyone else about the evidence received here in court. And please don't come back until 2 o'clock, okay? 2.
Rise for the jury.
All right, we're in recess.
Your Honor, as I indicated...
housekeeping.
Yeah, as I indicated, we're just going to provide a laptop.
But we can't begin without the defendant. Please
right.
Think of it on a Your Honor, do you have a preference? Do you want the
Well, I would say given the documents, I agree with you. Given the documents, I agree he should be here. I know you can waive, but this is part of the trial, and he should be here for this document in particular.
Yes?
Well, they are going to be your exhibits, so you should go first.
I'm going to start with the 21st, okay? Okay. This dialogue here that takes place between pages 2 and 5. You have heard the defense attorneys on appropriate questioning of the witnesses and also during opening statements talk about how
upset Mr. Baldwin was, that he was upset, that he was panicked, that he was ashen. He was even ashen in color. What pages 2 through 5 demonstrate, and I want to tell you, let me make one correction. Sure.
The highlighted is the portion that you want redacted. Okay, well, I only see, got the wrong one in front of me. Okay, all right, sorry, I transposed them. Okay, go ahead.
Let me find this part. Hang on just a second. Okay, to help make my point, if we go down to the last paragraph of page 4, you'll see where Mr. Baldwin is speaking to someone on the phone, and he says, "And just spend the time here, and they're going to do what they've got to deal with." He's talking about, I think, investigators and also insurance investigators, and deal with what they've got to deal with. And we shouldn't let, we'll go have, it'll work, and we'll go. And I believe what he says, and I can play it if you need me to, because you can actually hear it on the audio, even though the transcript says indiscernible. We'll go have a good time. So these are not, at this point in time when Mr. Baldwin is making this statement, he is at the police station. He does not know that Ms. Hutchins has passed, but he knows that she's been critically injured, and she's so injured that she's been taken away in a helicopter. And if the defense hasn't spent all of this time saying, how panicked and upset he was, I'm not sure that it would be relevant, but he is actually planning basically a vacation, and he tells his family, still come to New Mexico, we'll have a good time. So this is obviously information that directly contradicts what the defense has argued. And if the court, if it would help the court to see his demeanor and hear what he actually says, his family was coming to New Mexico the following day because he had a bit part for his daughter in the movie. So his wife and all of his children were coming the following day, and he is telling his, at one point, I think he's speaking to his wife, and he has her on FaceTime so we can actually hear her, we can hear her responses. And then he's speaking to another person who sounds like some sort of a family assistant or a nanny or someone like that. And he is explaining that he wants that person to try to convince his wife to still come to New Mexico because they can't get their money back for the plane tickets, and they'd like to go ahead and have a good time. So here's where he says it. There's a part here where he says, they're not gonna give us our money back.
Oh yeah, that's, okay.
That's what he's referring to.
Okay.
So are
you talking about lines 19 through 25 on page 4 you object to the redaction on? Just this portion.
On what page, I'm sorry?
Well, you said 2 to 5, and then you pointed out a particular portion within 2 to 5.
Overall, my position is this is the defendant's statement, and it comes in. And I don't see a reason that it stays out. And the reason specifically that a lot of this conversation comes in is because of the defense statements about his state of mind, and this directly contradicts those.
I'm up here. No?
Do you want these?
Yeah, I want you to go over there.
Can I leave these here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
2 seconds. So, Your Honor, first, what we have within this section that we're going to be discussing right now is we have also some additional hearsay. So we're looking at not only Mr. Baldwin's statements, but it also includes statements from the female speaker who would be his wife. And then you see female speaker 1, there's also female speaker 2. So there's additional hearsay aside from, again, the statements that we're talking about with respect to Mr. Baldwin. In addition, when we're looking at whether or not this is admissible, the court has to engage in a balancing test as to what the probative value actually is. The court has already indicated and ruled, in fact, at the motions in limine, that Mr. Baldwin's demeanor, even leading up to the accident, was not going to be coming in because the court engaged in that balancing test and said, for example, anything regarding him exhibiting poor behavior. Understood, Your Honor. And so I have actually the court's ruling here, so I'll be more specific. So what it says is that any of the videos or any evidence or pictures which relate to Mr. Baldwin not handling or that goes to the defendant's gun that worked or didn't work, and they're showing that it did work because he's shooting. There's videos showing that he's cocking the gun, and it says that those would come in. However, everything else regarding him yelling at the crew or telling people to hurry up, None of that is relevant, and that is propensity evidence.
No,
that is correct.
Was not offered. This was not even discussed at that time. So
correct.
This is fresh to the court.
Absolutely, Your Honor. So what we're doing is we're looking at what the court had previously ruled, and then we're using that also to inform the arguments that we're making at this time. And so certainly when we're talking about state of mind for after the fact, that becomes even less relevant than state of mind or actions that were happening leading up to the accident. So when we're looking at what this is actually probative of, the state is saying it's probative of that he's, you know, talking about he's going to go have a good time. He's really not that distraught about it. But if we look again at what is Mr. Baldwin's state of mind after this has happened, what element does that go to within the proof that the state has to demonstrate in order to meet the elements to demonstrate that he is actually guilty of involuntary manslaughter? And the answer is that none of this here is probative of any effect of consequence to any of the elements of the crime that he is charged with. So when the court is engaging in this balancing test, we have to look to see what is the probative value, and there's none or very minimal. But the danger of unfair prejudice is substantial, and it substantially outweighs any probative value in that, again, he's talking about his family, he's talking about plans that they have, and there's danger that the jury will misinterpret that or misuse that to view him as being callous or that he doesn't care about Ms. Hutchins, when actually that's not accurate. So we are asking the court that the court exclude this section that we're referring to. In addition, Your Honor, we go over to page 5. If the court will look at the top of page 5, here again, this is just more that, you know, them trying to make him look callous. He's worried about, at the top, he's talking about staying away from people.
Yes, of course.
Oh, do you want? Okay,
I just want it because mine's under yours. So
understood.
I can't see where
you are. So, Your Honor, so what we're talking about here up at the top of the page is, again, he's worried about being photographed. He does live a very public life, and this is a very, you know, difficult, sensitive time just in general for everyone. And the references to the media here, again, could be taken as something callous or something of that sort. And so, you know, he's talking about, you know, this is breaking news, this is media, and he's trying to keep his family as well. So it's misleading, and when we engage in a 403 balancing test, this should not come in.
Normally, I would agree, but for the fact that the defense actually made his demeanor after the fact relevant. So now that they've made it relevant, it's relevant, and it goes both ways.
All right, thank you. The court makes the following ruling. Under 11-401, it says it has any tendency to make a fact more or less probable than it would be without the evidence and the fact is of consequence in determining the action. It is not only the issue of whether he committed the crime of involuntary manslaughter, it's also a relevant fact, and you all made that fact very important through Officer LaFleur yesterday. So I do find that it's relevant to basically respond to you all talking about how upset Mr. Baldwin was, and certainly that you considered that fact of consequence, and I'm deciding that this rebuttal information is of consequence. I also find that its probative value is not substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice and all the other choices that are under 11-403. I will say that I think that I'm not going to let everything in. I'm going to focus on page four, and I'll start with line 16 and on page four, and I will go to page 5.
And I'm sorry, is this what's coming in or what's staying out?
No, what's coming in.
Okay.
The rest of the yellow is staying out.
Can you repeat that line
just
again?
A minute, I'm reading page 5.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, so it's line 16, starting with Alec Baldwin, finishes the rest of the page 4, starts on page 5 at the top, and finishes on line 10. The rest of the yellow will be redacted.
Understood. Are we ready to move on to the next one?
Yeah.
The next one I show, and Ms. LeBlanc, just correct me if I'm wrong, is on page 12. This issue goes directly to Mr. Baldwin's state of mind, and I'm looking, Your Honor, I'm sorry, at basically 12 through 14. He understands that whether there's a live round on set or not, these guns can be dangerous, and he says it right here between 12 and 14. What he's talking about with the wadding can come out. If you're closer, you can get a burn. That's him talking about his knowledge of the danger of these guns. That goes directly to the heart of the state's case. As the court knows, the state doesn't disagree with 15 through 17. And again, when we start here on 18, where Mr. Baldwin says, I'm told, that again goes directly to his knowledge of the injuries that can occur if these guns are not handled with safety. He says right there, I'm told even with the flash powder, you can cause contusions and you can do a brain bleed and die. And you know what? We can take out this part here that says which both of them died, because that is relevant to the Brandon Lee, John Eric Hexum that we agreed to remove. So I don't oppose taking out both of them died, but this goes directly to the heart of the state's case. And then I think it's 21 through 25 we've agreed to redact. Obviously, this part here on the top of page 13 is very important to the state because Mr. Baldwin says, my point is I've been doing this. I shot enough guns in my day in movies. I've never seen this before where a flash round was. Obviously, what I'm trying to get in is he's got experience with firearms, and he talks to Detective Hancock pretty extensively about that. So his personal experience with firearms on movie sets and off movie sets is all absolutely relevant. You want me to stop there? Let's do this. Let me just, there you go.
So, Your Honor, this was already the subject of a defense motion in limine that the court ruled upon. So we have in the transcript of the pretrial proceedings, the parties were arguing about whether or not this knowledge of danger of blanks would be admissible. And so what the court ruled was, the court said, the court makes the following ruling, weighing whether it has any tendency to make a fact more probable or less probable than it would be without it, and whether its probable value substantially, probative value, substantially is outweighed by the unfair prejudice. I think it's difficult to deal with what I read in the grand jury transcripts about, you know, the theory about the negligent use of a deadly weapon is that this manner of handling, that he shouldn't have cocked the gun, etc. And then with respect to the alternative is that he failed to check the gun. He failed to confirm that the gun, and I remember the word confirm, about live ammunition before he pointed it at someone. The court went on, I think that I will not allow any testimony other than one sentence, probably by your expert, Ms. Morrissey, that says the blanks also can kill. But to consider that he failed somehow, that's just going to be up to the trier of fact. I think everybody knows that guns can kill. It depends on what's in there. But I think that you cannot mention it, but that's, you can mention it, but that's it. We're not going through five different questions on tell me how serious this is, and you know if he's a gun owner, and he's done all these Westerns or not Westerns, but all this gun experience, then he should have known. Just say that, and if you can tie that up, great. So that's specifically on this subject, and so we've already argued this, and the court has already ruled. So based on that, we are asking that the court, consistent with its previous ruling, exclude these portions. And the additional portions, there will be a number of other sections in the transcript that I think we can dispense with rather quickly once we have the court's ruling on that as well.
Is that the part about the, when he talks about the commingling, is one of them about the commingling and the dummy rounds?
I don't recall, Your Honor. I have some flagged, but I think we can move through them fairly quickly, and I can identify those to the court every place that is throughout the transcript. But
all right, thank you.
If I may. So my concern is that I didn't realize necessarily during the motion hearing, I thought we were talking about witness testimony, not the defendant's own statements. And let me try to articulate for the court where I think some difficulty may come in. If I have my expert do what the court suggested and just have him give the one sentence that blanks can kill, then what we're missing, the important part is that Mr. Baldwin knows that. So these statements that he made to Detective Hancock go directly to that one sentence that you're allowing us to get in, because Mr. Baldwin actually knows that, and the elements of the offense go directly to what he knew or should have known. That's in the actual jury instruction. So this is something that he knew or should have known. There are rules that say don't point the gun at anyone, and this is obviously one of the reasons, is because even if you have largely inert ammunition, it can still hurt someone, or Mr. Baldwin even indicated he knew that it could kill someone. So I think that this needs to be in for that reason.
Which motion was it? Your Honor, it was all personal.
Your Honor, I believe this was number 3. This would be defense 3, is that correct? Defendant's motion in limine 3, I believe it was. And we have the transcript if the court would like to review it. Based on what the state has just argued in their reply, may I just be heard as to the new arguments?
Is this your motion?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The new argument?
Yes,
that's her reply, isn't it? Didn't she go first?
She did.
You're doing a surreply.
And if I may have just a few sentences, Your Honor, because I think this is important as what she stated is new, since she's now talking about disagreeing with the ruling that we had. But we relied on the court's ruling. In our jury selection, we did not cover this topic. In our opening, we did not cover this topic.
It's not 3. Where is it?
I believe it's number 3. It's the foreseeability.
7, Your Honor.
Oh, 7. I apologize, Your Honor. Number 7.
You mean defendant 7?
Defendant's 7. Yes, Your Honor. It was our motion to exclude.
Don't have these numbered.
Would the court like me to present the transcript?
No.
The court's convenience.
What is the name of the motion?
The name of the motion.
Motion to exclude evidence related to the family, Your Honor.
Oh, all right.
The additional blanks came up in the opposition.
Okay, got it. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. To allow the state to basically relitigate this, I think would put us in very dangerous territory because the defense relied on the court's ruling and the court was very clear about what would be permitted and what would not be. And I think to say that the state thought that somehow didn't apply to statements they wanted to introduce by Mr. Baldwin is disingenuous. And so we relied on this again in our jury. Yes, Your Honor. Permission to approach the court.
You know, this was related to, and I think I say it here, where I talk about on page 154, which you left out, but this is to Mr. Nikas, where he's saying that the state, Ms. Hutchinson, would have died if there were a blank in the gun, that they were asserting that they were going beyond live ammunition, and they were talking about that they expected witnesses to testify, in particular Mr. Carpenter, that blanks can kill as well, and that he should have known that. That's different from his own admissions of his knowledge, and I'm going to let the following in. I'm going to let page 12, I'm going to let line 13, right in the middle. Sometimes the wadding can come out. If you're closer, you can get a burn. It shows that he does have knowledge of guns.
Hang on. Your Honor, just want to... I see. I'm sorry.
And then on lines 18, 19, and I'm told even with a flash powder, you can cause contusions and you can do a brain bleed. And then also lines 1 through 5 on page 13.
And Your Honor, I do understand the court's ruling. If I may, just for the court, just to remind you, because I know we're dealing with the transcripts and we had these arguments earlier. So if I may, just to kind of perhaps refresh the court a little bit. Part of what the arguments were about as well was the fact that the way that the grand jury presentation had gone, and in that had not been focused on blanks. It was about live ammunition, live rounds, and that was the basis of what the knowledge must be in order for it to meet the elements of
this
the charge.
This is what, in the grand jury, Mr. Carpenter was talking about all these duties that Mr. Baldwin should have had, including the knowledge that blanks can kill. He said that he should have had that knowledge. Everybody has that knowledge when they talk about don't point him the gun and things like that. And I did not want to belabor the point that blanks can kill, okay? But that's different from Mr. Baldwin's own assertions of the knowledge that he had with respect to gun. Right, next.
Your Honor, same argument from the state with regard to the bottom of page 14, the last two words that start with and I'm. And then if we move to the top of 15, this is the exact same information, exact same argument. It's Mr. Baldwin solidifying and reiterating what he knew or should have known that goes directly to the elements of the offense. Nothing further.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I was actually retrieving my item. Can you look page where we are?
If we go right down to the bottom of 14, and we just start with those two words, and then we just roll over to the first four lines of 15.
Thank you.
And so, you know, the issue that we're going to have, again, with this, Your Honor, is that, you know, we did not ask witnesses questions regarding this type of harm and what was learned, and certainly those kinds of things might have been able to come through Ms. Popple. And so, you know, and again, we did not do jury selection on this, which we absolutely would have. We didn't open on this because of the ruling and the way that we understood it based on our review of the transcript. So I do have concerns that this is going to prejudice the defense, and we would ask that the court consider not allowing
attention
this.
To my ruling, because my ruling was with respect to witnesses, because I particularly told Ms. Morrissey that her witness got to ask, she got to ask her witness one sentence. That is because Mr. Carpenter was really opinionated about that blanks can kill in the grand jury, and I did not want to move away from the fact that they weren't blanks, it was live ammunition. But this goes to Mr. Baldwin's state of mind, completely different, and I'm going to let this in as well. Page 15, 1 through 4, lines 1 through 4.
Do you know where the next jump is?
Yeah. I think 62. Do you want to move over?
Huh?
Do you want me to move back?
No, you're fine. Because there we go. We'll just sit down. Okay. Your Honor, we're jumping to the bottom of page 62. You know what? I'm gonna change my position. Why don't we go ahead and just exclude the bottom of 62 and the top of 63.
Right. Yes, I agree.
What's the next one, Heather, since you've got the tab?
The next one we have is 69.
So I think that as witness testimony, and it's difficult when we're doing motions in limine because the court certainly doesn't know what all the witness testimony is going to be. So part of the issue here is we were intending to ask the court to, not necessarily today with these witnesses, to potentially reconsider this ruling. I don't think it makes a big difference in this particular interview, but we absolutely have witnesses who will testify if the court were to permit them. The safety bulletins speak directly to producers and their responsibility for set safety. I can show it to you. In addition to that, the witnesses who were on scene with Mr. Baldwin would discuss the fact that his role as producer is what enabled him to be in a position to disregard the safety rules. But with regard to this particular line, I'm not married to it. I can try to revisit this issue with the court when we have relevant witnesses on the witness stand.
Your Honor, the court had the ability to reserve.
So all I'm looking at is this line, okay?
Correct.
Both of you. And I'm going to not let it in.
Okay.
Okay, next.
This one's out by stipulation. Let me see. Next is page 81. A portion of that is out by stipulation, but I believe the next is page 81.
Yes.
The top portion of that is out by stipulation, I believe, but then the lower part of page 81 is still subject to disagreement.
Let me just refresh my memory on what it is. So some of this contains his, I guess the top part of it, it is directly related to what he's talking about at the beginning, which the court admitted. So my concern is I don't think that we, if we take out, and on Saturday my daughter was going to be in the movie, we had a little part for her in this top. I want to point out that here at the bottom of page 81, Mr. Baldwin says, well, let me ask you this. Originally, this is very complicated. I mean, none of this compared to what happened to them, but my wife and my whole family was here. They weren't, but his daughter was going to be in the movie. So again, this goes to the opening arguments, the continuing defense,
that we are going to hear throughout the course of this trial. Mr. Baldwin, at this point in time, knows that someone's in the hospital and another person has been taken away on a helicopter, is critically injured, and what he is concerned about during the interview is what's happening to his family and whether or not his family is going to come and visit him. So he's actually taking a moment in the interview with the detective to talk about, this is complicated because my family is supposed to come.
So, Your Honor, the court has already ruled admissible the previous portion of this. And again, I think when the court is looking at balancing, the court can also determine how much of this to permit in. It is cumulative of what the state already has used the earlier statements to reference, which would be his supposed state of mind after the fact. I don't know how much we need to then, you know, continue to allow in all of the rest of this over and over. And certainly, again, him wanting to have his family there with him is not shocking after something like this. It is certainly a very difficult time. But again, the court, as the court is looking at the balancing, one of those things that the court will balance is the cumulative nature of what is being offered. The court has already ruled admissible the previous statements, and we would ask that the court not allow additional statements related to that at this time based on the limited probative value of the testimony or evidence.
All right, I don't think this is of much consequence. I think that the part I ruled on earlier went to rebut the information about his coloring and everything else like that. Granted, there was a lapse in time, so that can be addressed in questioning, but the fact that his daughter was going to be in the movie and he's mentioning that, I don't think that, and she was so excited to come, I don't think that's helpful. He's just describing really his kids. That's not coming in.
Understood. Is the next one that on page 83? Is that
yes. Yes. And the first, I think, 5 lines are out by stipulation, and then we're just dealing with then 6.
Right. So 6 through 14, certainly the top part is an explanation of his comments at the beginning that the court has ruled are admissible. I certainly can forfeit. I told the producers I would stay tomorrow in case anybody else, their insurance investigators, their lawyers want to talk to me. I don't have too much heartburn over letting that go, but I do think that the fact that there are 2 people who've been taken away to the hospital and Mr. Baldwin is upset because his wife wants to cancel her trip, again, goes directly to the defense of this man was devastated.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. So, Your Honor, the state, this was already part of the stipulation, was through page 83, line 5. So I won't argue that since the state had already stipulated to that earlier. With respect to lines 6 through 14, much of what is being relayed here is actually his wife's statements, you know, about what she thought about, you know, the weird energy or whether or not she wanted to come down. And so I think, again, the state has already, is already going to be permitted to introduce those other statements related to his state of mind. This has very minimal probative value, particularly considering the court's ruling a moment ago, and we would ask that the court exclude this, particularly, again, considering the fact that a lot of this is about his wife and her thoughts as well, and it's not sufficiently probative.
Yeah, I don't think it's very relevant. I think, and the relevancy goes to the rebuttal of how he was feeling. I think that the pages 4 and 5 directly relate to that, but I don't think this does, so I'm not going to redact it. Last page.
There is further down on the same page, I believe it starts at line 22 of page 83, and then continues on into page 84, line 8.
So, Mr. Baldwin has critically injured someone, and what he's saying to the detective, and keep in mind, Your Honor, Mr. Baldwin was going to stay and complete the originally, he was going to be in New Mexico to complete the filming until, I think, close to the end of October. And he is already making plans to return home to New York, even though he's critically injured 2 people. It is the exact opposite of what the defense is going to argue, which is this was devastating to him.
you know, this devastate. I think there's even phrases in this interview where he says, "I'm devastated," or maybe it's in November 3rd. So this is completely contradictory to other statements that he makes where he says, "I'm devastated." Two people are in the hospital and he doesn't even want to stay and make sure they're okay.
Your Honor, he offered to stay, and that's throughout this transcript. It even says it further down on this same page. He says, "Unless you tell me not to, or if you tell me to come back in, I'll do whatever it is that you want." He's making himself completely available, but not shockingly, his wife wants him home. He is a father.
It's going to be redacted. All right, next.
The next one is out by stipulation, which is on page 85.
I think that's it. Could it be on this one?
I will note, Your Honor.
Stipulated to. Okay, what?
Yes. There were other portions within here that we had found that were related to the blank situation. I understand the court's ruling. If the court is willing to consider as part of its gatekeeping function, limiting the amount of that.
Too late. Just the amount. Too late. That's what happens when you do 2 days before. Okay, let's go.
Just in terms of, I know that we've got one more statement to try to tackle. So now that the court has ruled on the redactions, because these are the defense requests, I'm expecting the defense to do the redactions and provide them to me quickly, because this is Hancock, and Hancock's going to take the witness stand as soon as possible.
That is our intention.
Well, you're finished, so you're going to do the...
I apologize. Five or so, 10 minutes max.
Okay, and then you're going to do the redirect. So while they're doing that, go ahead and provide a copy with the redactions that I've ruled to be redacted, which were minimal. Okay.
Yes, Judge.
What's next?
There is the second statement. It's your copy.
The second statement, this is a statement that takes place on
I hope you got that. Do you need any clarification? Because I don't want this going south when Hancock's on the stand. Do you want me to repeat it?
I think we have it from the transcript room. I think we have it from the transcript.
My rulings.
Yes, so, just to be able to real-time.
All right, okay, what's next? I said the jury comes back at 2. They have 1 minute before I call back the jury. Otherwise, you're going to abandon these.
Yes, Your Honor, we'll be quick.
So if we look at this part at the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2,
this is what I'm going to do because we're running out of time. I'm going to make a ruling. These were given to your intended redactions were given 2 days before. And so far, the only thing I've heard that was a surprise was the testimony of his knowledge of guns. So let's see. Well, I mean, everybody got a point somewhere. I don't find that. I'm going to redact that. I don't find that's relevant. It's just in passing, really. And he's talking about other people.
Well, if I can,
sure.
Your Honor, I just want to talk about it in a little bit more context. So what's happening here is Detective Hancock and Mr. Baldwin are talking about Ms. Gutierrez and her lawyers. Mm-hmm. Ms. Gutierrez is obviously being, her conduct is being discussed extensively. Mr. Baldwin says, but it's her lawyer saying that on her behalf. So if we're going to, if we're going to redact the bottom portion, then honestly, I think that we need to redact the part where he says, it's her lawyer saying that on her behalf. I mean, I think if we redact the part about the lawyers, we redact everything.
That's fine. It does take it out of like nowhere context. Okay. I'll tell you what I'm thinking, and then if you really want to argue it. All right, page 15. I don't find this relevant.
I'm sorry. Let me catch up to you.
Sure.
So this is relevant because what Mr. Baldwin is talking about right here to Hancock is his intention to sit for a public interview, and that public interview turns out to be with George Stephanopoulos. It was that interview that led to the accidental discharge testing and all kinds of stuff. So again, Judge, it's the defendant's own statement. He He knew he had a right to counsel.
All right, I'll let 1 through 6 in, but this thing about the Kennedy Center is not coming in. 1 through 6 on page 15.
1 through 6 comes in, the rest of it's out. Understood.
Page 18. Tell me why this is relevant or not relevant or relevant. Ms. Morrissey.
Okay, let me just... Sure, so the top part, it is him saying to Detective Hancock, you don't know anything about my business. You don't know anything about my business. You're in law enforcement. You're the person who, when they do something wrong, you're the last person they want to see. You live a very, very difficult but ultimately very narrow life. I believe, hang on, let me finish it a little bit. It all goes, I think we've got like three or four pages, so I think it all kind of goes together. Hang on just a second. Okay, so this part, I mean, the part at the bottom of 18, it puts in context the part at the top of 19, and this goes directly to Mr. Baldwin's motivation to lie about pulling the trigger of the gun. I'm 63 years old with 6 kids. I can't rely on luck anymore. He's talking about his career and that he can't rely on luck anymore. This goes exactly to his motivation not to tell the truth. Sorry.
Can we approach her?
I don't think this information is that helpful one way or the other. But I'm going to let it in because of the lateness of your redaction. So, because it's 2:00 now. And so we're going to go. All right?
I understand.
May I just briefly just be heard on that point?
No. All right. Get your redactions in earlier.
Understand. And that includes 20.
Everything I quit on coming in. You understand? That page forward?
Yes.
So everything's up.
And that page.
Okay.
There's more to come in the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.